Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
And you're very welcome along to a special Tuesday night edition of our rugby slot. I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line by former Ireland hooker Keith Wood and also by the former England Lions and Bath fly half Stuart Barnes. Evening, gentlemen.
Evening.
Keith, I'll start with you first. The bad news came in today, Keith, that Leinster and indeed Ireland are going to have to plan without Jonathan Sexton for the next while. It's the latest bump in the road, and it kind of shows that we really need to start planning for life after Johnny, because this is, unfortunately, given the age profile, going to be something that's become more regular.
Yeah, I mean, he's like everybody getting older. He has played quite a lot of big rugby. We need to start trusting the other players too. So I think that's one of the key factors that will be here. I'd be interested to hear what Stuart, as a former out half, would have in terms of that. But look, he's played an awful lot of rugby, managed to get the last 8 or 9 months pretty much injury free. And it was a nasty, it actually could have been an awful lot worse. I thought his cruciate was gone at one stage. It looked really, really nasty, which could have been the end of his career, and it isn't. So for a guy that's played an awful lot of big rugby, he now gets an opportunity to train without the pressure of playing, and I think we'll see him back to his best again. It's going to be a couple of months.
Yeah, Stuart, I'll get your opinion on this one as well, because I know you've mentioned in the week you were talking in the podcast The Ruck with Lawrence Lally on Owen Slot about how John Cooney needs to be fitted in somewhere into that halfback section for Ireland. There is a sense that there needs to be a reconfiguration of sorts in around that area of the field from Andy Farrell and Ireland at the start of the Six Nations.
I think so. I was interested to hear Keith say he used the word trust. And I think it's very difficult for the next generation of Irish nines and tens, because I think Joe Schmidt overplayed the trust hand with Connor and Johnny. It felt to me, even the other side of the Irish Sea, that there was, you know, it was Sexton and Murray aren't there. What are we going to do? There's no way to plan for international rugby. You know, just briefly on the number nine thing, I think Cooney has been the best scrum half in Ireland for 9 months. And club and European form doesn't necessarily translate to international, but it does demand an opportunity. And I think, I think Andy Farrell now has got to start giving these opportunities. And I think the same applies to Johnny. I wouldn't be quite as optimistic as Keith on this one. I think he was playing okay in the months leading up to the World Cup and through it, but I don't think we've seen the Johnny Sexton from 2018. And frankly, I think if he is going to play at a high level of international rugby again and challenge for Lions honours in 2021, I think he's got to reassess the way he plays. And obviously the injury was just one of those things. I agree with Woody, it was a horrible looking thing, but he's a very brave fly half. He defends very hard, he's extremely physical. He's got to give his body a chance now, and he's got to take, if you like, the Cipriani approach and think, hey, I run these shows now, I don't have to prove myself physically, and I just think he's just got to, when he gets back, just take a little time out and be a little less physical.
Yeah, Keith, that's something that players in all sports kind of have to reconfigure once they hit early to mid-30s. They almost begin to play the game the first yard or two in their heads. It becomes a more cerebral kind of thing rather than a physical one. As Stuart mentioned there, Jonathan's going to have to reassess what it is he can do, what his body will allow him to do, and what's actually feasible for him going forward for the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, look, I'm interested. I myself and Barnsley could probably fight on the phone all day just to argue through different parts of this. I think Johnny is, I think we can get another year or two out of Johnny. I think that may be the full extent of it. And I know he's talked about following Brady and being able to play until he's 40 or whatever in American football. I don't see that happening. I don't see that happening in rugby. I actually do think he's got his head around not having to take every ball to the line and getting smashed for it. What I would say is I think that the manner in which Ireland has played over the last year when everybody else changed and maybe we didn't, I just don't think we got the best out of him. So I'd say he is absolutely livid that he's injured, because he has looked over the last couple of weeks, I know it's only a couple of weeks, but it's in a different jersey. It's in a blue jersey, where I think he's been trusted to play it as he sees it a little bit more. And there are the wraparound plays we're used to, but there's also been a different sort of, there's been a change to his demeanor, which I think has been positive for him. Now, I think, as always, you extract the most out of players in their, like he'll be 35 in a few months' time. You extract everything you can out of them. And then that's it. They owe us nothing. We owe them nothing. That's the nature of it. But part of the extracting out of him is giving that sense of confidence to the other players that are going to come after him. You know, he can't be the one stopping them. He has to be the one with that level of trust and confidence in himself to be able to build up his successors, because that's actually what we need from him now. Personally, I think 21 is too far for him on a Lions tour. The game has become a lot harder, a lot more physical, and he could be a bit part player maybe, but that's never been Johnny Sexton's way. He wants to be the man. And I think it might be a step too far. And, you know, if he gets there, we want him there in top form, not getting there because he deserves it. He only deserves it if he's the best one or two tens in Britain and Ireland.
Stuart, we found out from an Irish perspective that Warren Gatland's not one to stand on ceremony in terms of experienced players on Lions tours. Can you see 2021 being a realistic objective for Jonathan Sexton? And if he does manage to make that squad, is he going to be a key component of Warren Gatland starting 15 or starting 23 going into those three tests with the Springboks?
Three tests, eight matches. You're going to go there, as Keith says, you've got to be a serious contender. Sexton, by his nature, is that sort of player. I don't think that is going to be the case. I think we're starting to see something quite exceptional from Finn Russell. Now, I know that raises his eyebrows, but when he plays behind dominant teams, and Lion Packs are always very strong, even in South Africa, they'll be competitive, then Russell is starting to look something special. And I just think, you know, from an Irish perspective, yes, you extract what you can without making him sound like sort of a fossil fuel, but you've also got to encourage the others to come through. Ireland, you know, if Ireland are going to be competing for Six Nations, Triple Crowns and Championships and beating the big guns in the Southern Hemisphere, they can't have someone coming in because Johnny's not quite right. You know, Carberry's got to feel like he owns it if he is to be the heir apparent. That's how it's going to be. I'm a huge fan of Sexton. He's intelligent. He's competitive on and off the field. He's been a great ambassador of the game. I'm not writing him off now, but I think from now on he will probably be more influential, more dominant in the blue of Leinster than the green of Ireland. And if in 2 years' time he is Ireland's still number one, he's either a miracle man or Ireland are pushing things too far. And I felt, you know, I watched Jordan Lama play at fullback the weekend, and I watched him play wing where he's not as suited in the World Cup, and I felt they went one tournament too long with Rob Kearney because of loyalty and trust. Loyalty is an integral part of sport, but it's also a massive weakness if you overplay the cards. It's a hard one to come up with, but you've got to get that right. And I think the biggest thing for Andy Farrell now is knowing when to stop looking back and when to start looking forward.
Is it going to be a clean slate, Keith, for Andy going forward from here?
I think he has a clean slate. I think he will pick and see in a pragmatic way, actually, what he wants. And I do think we'll see a bit of a loosening of the reins, because there has to be. From all the noises we've heard in the last period of time in terms of some of the elements of control, and I would have to say from some of the players not taking control, I think there's all these things are a little bit collaborative. Of course, you have the boss, but you still need to fight your corner well. I don't know that seemed to happen as much. I'd be looking to see that here's a guy who is strong enough. I think Stuart knows him a bit as well. He's a strong, comfortable character, but he has got an incredible winning attitude. But I would say he's a footballer first and foremost. He is process driven, but he is not the be all and end all process driven. So I think he gets a chance to build a team the way he wants to. So he's worked for the last number of years with different coaches who have run teams their way, and he's had to follow to do it. Of course, he'd have an input, but you still have to do what the boss says. He's the boss now. I think he gets a really good chance to put his mark down on what he expects an Irish rugby team to be. For me, I find that very exciting. I've loved an awful lot of the Joe Schmidt period of time. Of course, like everybody else, we're disappointed in 2019, and I think mistakes were made, and that's been discussed often. But I just find it really exciting to look to the future to see what is the potential and what can he extract differently from the players than Joe Schmidt did, and what level of trust he has in some of the younger guys coming through.
Yeah, I'm getting the sense you want to see a bit more initiative from the players themselves.
Well, I want that always, I have to say. I think part of being a leader, a senior player, is challenging the coach.
But that maybe it dropped off under Schmidt, you feel?
Well, I don't know. That's what it sounded like in the last couple of weeks. I haven't been on the inside, but that was intimated by Rory Best. It's been intimated by some of the other noises that have come out there, whether we'll ever know or not know. I always think it's when the pressure comes on, many voices are much better than one voice on its own. And what seems to happen an awful lot is when huge pressure comes on, the last 6 months of a lot of coaches that we've had, that collaboration goes more quiet. And you don't get your way. It's funny. I was a pain in the arse for coaches. I always was. You know, I would challenge every single assumption, but I didn't want to necessarily get my way. I did in some cases. But I often didn't get my way. But it's important to have the coach have as much information as possible. And that's something I was always very keen on. And I think it's something that's very important.
Yeah, Stuart, it's one of those things.
One of those things. Keith was a man who came through the tail end of amateurism into professionalism. And he's talking about the same thing I would talk about. I think in the 20-odd years between the game moving from amateurism to professionalism, the one area where the game actually has been professional in name only is the interaction between senior players and coaches. I would say that when the game was amateur and players were thinking, I'm getting hammered here for nothing other than a bit of glory, then I want to think about it and I want to ask questions. And when the game went professional and you were being paid and the coach became in a position where he had to show to either his club owner or to his international board management that he was in charge, relationships changed and they strained a bit. And I think it's not just Joe, and it certainly was Joe. In England still, you know, England got to the final, but let it not mask the fact that England's game plan was always that of Eddie Jones. And when the Eddie Jones game plan failed on the pitch, England were incapable of making changes. That happened for 2 years. I would say that the last year or two of All Black rugby, they were less flexible than any New Zealand team I've seen, and I think that impacted as well. So I think it's a trend going through the game, but the manner in which Joe Schmidt coached was such that it stood out in an Ireland team.
Keith, I guess the interesting thing now is where next, who'll pick up that number 10 jersey going into the Six Nations. We still have question marks over the fitness of Joey Carberry. Munster aren't in any hurry to rush him back, and that's only fair given the nature of his injury. Sexton, we know, will be missing for the first two games, which leaves us with your likes of Jack Carty's and Ross Burns. Who's in the pecking order to step in there as far as you're concerned?
It's funny, I was interested in the Jack Carty getting picked into the World Cup squad, and at times I'm critical of Ross Byrne as well. For me, Joey Carberry is the standout guy. I think JJ Hanrahan has done some very good rugby over the last period of time. He's just got a run of games. He hasn't had those for a while. But for me, it's Carberry still number one. I would go Ross Byrne number two. And the reason I like Carberry ahead of Byrne and Carty is that when the pressure comes on in big international games, Carberry tends to attack the game more. And I just thought in the World Cup, Carty in particular was going deeper and deeper and deeper because he hasn't played a huge amount of rugby. And when the real pressure came on, it's much easier the deeper you are at 10. I mean, you're better off asking Stuart, but it's much easier that for yourself, you're not under anywhere near as much pressure, but it puts the rest of the team under pressure.
Yes, it does. And if we're talking about a catalyst for change here in Ireland, And Carberry is that very man. He has got different elements to his game, shards of his game that are actually better than stuff that Sexton could do. He didn't have Sexton's overall control, of course, his experience and just the ability to run a show. But Carberry could do very different things. And I agree, when I thought Byrne would have gone in front of Jack Carty to the World Cup because I thought Ireland wanted a like-for-like Sexton replacement. Leinster have worked him very well. And I think with Sexton out, what you want is Carberry starting to just try and up the gears for Ireland. But you have someone then like Byrne who is capable, if Ireland are in the lead and they want to close a game out, or they just can't quite find their structure, to bring him into the scenario. I totally agree with Woody. Hard to believe with a hooker on fly half matters, but it, once or twice in the World Cup, Carty came off the bench and he got a lot of praise, but he got praise for dropping deep and playing corners. There's a time and place for that, but that is not the overall route to becoming a great international test team.
Stuart, with a fly half's eyes, what does Joey Carberry have, as you mentioned, that Jonathan Sexton doesn't?
Probably slightly more time on the ball. I think Sexton's defensive, his territorial kicking and his crossfield and high bombs are brilliant, but Joey's array of little kicks are superb, and they're better than Johnny's, I think, because when you're coming up with these tiny grubbers and these little feints, the diagonal feints, the key to those kicks is being able to wait as late as you can, because that brings midfields up, it brings open side wings up, which opens up space. In this game of rugby, it's quite simple. You know, if you can force the open side wing to stay deep because you're worried about a kicking game, then there is space for your winger to attack. If you can bring him up because he's scared to death about the outside half putting the missed pass in, then you can go behind him. I think Carberry has lovely hands. He's one of these guys who the clock ticks slower when he's playing rugby, and that's something I like in a fly half.
Stuart, he will be missing for Munster this coming weekend. Saracens in the return fixture in the Champions Cup are going to be changing things around in a far more dramatic style than what we saw at Thomond Park last week. We're going to see a very different Saracens side and possibly a very different result this weekend coming in the Heineken Champions Cup.
I wrote Monday in the Times, I think anyone who writes Saracens off would be very foolish now. I think ugly game, terrible game, awful conditions, all of that. But the fact that Saracens got a bonus point is psychologically important. I think it finalises the thought process of Mark McCall, who now will think with 6 points and Munster and Racing at home and Ospreys away, they are in a position when they can and should get the points to make the last eight. I spoke to him when they beat the Ospreys in round two, and he said, if we get to the quarterfinals, we will have a chance, a big chance. And he had a little smile on his face. The hard work, the threats for Munster are right now. I think the big risk they took was going to Thomond Park with a fairly inexperienced team in key areas. Coming away with a bonus point is very good for them. That was a game that Munster really should have targeted 4-0. 4-1 is, I think, it's a win of sorts for Saracens. And I've got to say, they will have noted some pretty severe press in Ireland, worse than they've got even in England. And knowing Saracens as a club as I do, they will use that to fuel themselves. And I think it's going to be a tough old time for Munster. And I think the more wind and rain at the weekend, the better for the visitors.
You were saying, Stuart, that a 5 points to nil victory, in essence, a bonus point win for Saracens without conceding one, is their objective this coming weekend.
No doubt at all. They've got 6 points now. They think 19 will get them into the playoffs as a best runner-up. 20 will definitely do that. I think they will go flat out at home against Racing and Munster, and I think they'll take a bit of a risk and rest some players for the Ospreys game. Survival in the Premiership is still their priority, but people are confusing the fact they think because that's their priority, they've thrown Europe overboard. They haven't. It's just a secondary objective. But every game they get nearer qualification, it becomes a more serious objective.
Mm. Keith, Johan van Graan's comments after that game saying we'll take a win against Saracens any day of the week, when he was asked about whether he was upset about conceding that losing bonus point, he will inside be fuming that they managed to do that against what was a second string Saracens side, regardless of the conditions down there in Limerick.
Yeah, I still don't go second string because there was an awful lot of the guys that had played in the final the previous year. Saracens have an incredible squad. I couldn't get over how everybody had seemed to presume that Munster would get four tries and a bonus point with it. And for me, the only thing that was disappointing, now the weather, it became the end of days for the second half, but the only thing that was disappointing was that lack of an extra score to take Saracens away from getting a bonus point, because it heaps a huge amount of pressure on Munster. I watched that particular Saracens team, not even... I think it was against Gloucester about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it was just after the news had come out, and they went and they played, and it was the most aggressive and embittered performance I've seen for a long, long time, and it was phenomenal. It was actually phenomenal. They made a load of mistakes. They didn't have a lot of their big name players there, but their attitude was the attitude that they've had for the last 3 or 4 years. It was almost daunting. So I was thrilled to bits with the win, but I was really annoyed that we let them get a bonus point, because yeah, I'd agree. I think Saracens are looking at this with a really with eyes on the prize. They want to get to the end of everything. But I still would say that Munster will turn up too. Munster have a bitter enough edge. And they know that they could have taken away one of those points and didn't do so. So I would expect Munster to go over and have their performance of a season, because they've shown a little bit more. They showed an awful lot that first half that they're growing a lot this season. Nobody could have played in the second half. It was nobody scored in the second half.
Yeah, Stuart, you've mentioned that Ulster and Munster are kind of a step behind where Leinster are. There's I guess a cadre of clubs in Europe, Toulouse, Saracens and Leinster, that are above everyone else, and then beyond that you're kind of scrapping for quarterfinal places and maybe a semi-final. You don't really think that Munster and Ulster are at that level just yet, so I'm not thinking that I'm, from your point of view, I'm guessing that you don't see Munster picking up a result at Allianz Park.
No, I don't think this is a vintage Munster team. I think it's far from it. I think the draw with Racing told you a lot at Thomond Park. It didn't disguise the fact that the French were a far superior team, and I think Munster aren't going to get anything in that sort of rock and roll, sort of glitzy Parisian showground. I'm aware of what Munster have done in France, and I think most people know, as an Englishman, there's no bigger fan of what Munster means in terms of rugby and spirit, but I just don't think this team will be good enough in Paris. And I think when Saracens bring back the big guns, I think Saracens will get a 5-0 at this weekend, and that will change this pool considerably.
On to pool three, Ulster sit top of that one going into Friday at the Twickenham Stoop, playing Harlequins. But Stuart, it's those bonus points that they've coughed up at home, both to Clermont and to Harlequins themselves. It's really going to stick in the craw for them.
To me, one of the most interesting sights in the Heineken Cup this season was that win against Clermont, who were desperate on that Friday night. They had one of their, we really don't want to be in Belfast on a wet, windy Friday night. Sorry, we want to be in the Auvergne in a nice wine bar. And Clermont had no right to get a point. They didn't dog it out. They got it by default. And at the final whistle, the Ulster players were jumping around, dancing and celebrating. They should be looking at Europe. They should look at what Munster and Leinster have done over the years when they've gone to places like Clermont and places like Toulouse, lost but got an all-important bonus point. Letting Clermont get a bonus point there has given Clermont the edge. Clermont now, they've gone to Bath, they've got 5 points where Ulster only got 4. And it's a bit like last season. I can see Ulster, a very organised, tough team, finding their way through as a best runner-up, but they just don't have the class to make the semis unless they've got that big advantage that is Raven Hill on a Friday or a Saturday evening. I just can't see it. I would say I thought Henderson was magnificent at all the key moments against Harlequins, and I thought it was an excellent game, and I'm really looking forward to it. But whatever happens, I can't see Ulster getting the result they're going to need in the Auvergne, and I think the best they're going to do is come out second. And the lack of bonus points is really haunting them, not just this season, last season too.
Keith, Dan McFarland's mentioned that if they played away to Harlequins the way they did at Kingspan Ravenhill, that they're not going to get a result. But he's also pointed out that they're not necessarily at the level of consistency that they want to be. And he says that's okay. They're still trying to piece things together as regards this season and actually get up to full speed. He thinks they're not there yet. Are they on their way, though?
I think they're on their way. I think they're relying unbelievably on Cooney. And without him, with his long-range penalties and tries in the last few minutes, they would have lost a lot of games this season. And you can't rely on that all the time. You know, you want players have purple patches, but you need teams to have purple patches. And Stockdale still needs to come back to form. I think they're still a bit light, and they'll need a couple of more players to really contend. And yet they have done an awful lot right so far. Things have gone their way, and when they have, they've taken advantage of it. They've tough matches. They need to get a good result here, and they need to do very well here, because you know, as Stuart said, going down to France, like, Clermont will never be that bad again, and they will never be that bad at home. They'll never let that happen.
Stuart, as well, I want to talk to you a bit about that Leinster Northampton game. The margin of victory kind of belied the fact that the first half hour was actually really competitive over in Franklin's Gardens. It was a really, really good game, really entertaining. Yeah, first 30 minutes, very competitive. But something you pointed out as well during the week was that 5 of the 7 tries for Leinster were from close range pick and go. So it wasn't as if that they were playing this massive expansive rugby and running it in from all over the place. It was actually a fairly grind and pound kind of effort from them at times.
Well, you can't always play sort of overdrive rugby in Europe, and most of the time you don't. Saracens, Toulon, Munster, all of these teams have built their mass trophy success on being able to control games in second and third gear. And sometimes I think fans and we in the media get carried away when a team do something spectacular with the ball in hand. That is not generally the way the big games are won. And what impressed me about Leinster, the game started in overdrive. It was thrilling. It was brilliant for a neutral's point of view. I was in Northampton. I was loving it. Then Leinster said, hang on a minute, let's drop this one to third and second. And they were patient and they kept ball. They played in the right parts of the field. And they're outstanding. When Northampton in the second half were behind and chasing the scoreboard and Leinster, they didn't have either the experience and with that the patience to keep the ball long enough to put Leinster's defence under enough pressure. And in the end, though, in terms of territory and possession and lots of signifiers, and you could say, oh, it was much closer than it was on the scoreboard. This is a nonsense. You score 7 tries, it's because you're doing certain things extremely well and the other team got 1 and they did certain things poorly. And showbiz rugby doesn't win in Europe. And I think Northampton will be better this week, because I think Chris Boyd is an outstanding coach. They've got some good players to come back into the game, like Laws. But I just think experience for Leinster's point of view, and the fact that, as Boyd said, they play like an international team, not a club team, makes them very hard to beat.
Yeah, that defeat as well, Keith, before we move off the Champions Cup stuff away to Gloucester, leaves Connacht bottom of Pool 5. They're really up against it, but I guess it looks like it's going to be another filthy day in Galway this coming Saturday. It's a lunchtime kickoff. It's one that Connacht will be really targeting to pick a win up in.
Yeah, I get a little bit of slagging off for this, but I always hated playing in Galway. It either always rained. No, it rains a lot in Kittaloo. I'm only an hour south or whatever. But the wind up there used to make it just, it's just the hardest place to go and play. I can't think of another place that I played that the conditions always seem to affect more often. And I love the fact that you have a team like Connacht that developed a style of playing under Pat Lam a few years ago, lost their way, now have found it again, and play that style in the worst condition of all. So when you're looking at a team that's trying to play at the top table, their way of doing it, I wouldn't say it's pragmatic, but it's fantastic and it's enjoyable and it is a winning style. I would expect them to win up there because it is one of those places that is just hard to go. And we used to try and say that I played with Quinns going over to Thomond Park years and years ago. And there was no amount of explaining you could do to the fellow internationals in your team that actually playing in Thomond Park is a pretty daunting thing and something they wouldn't have experienced. Well, playing in the sports ground is right up there on that same level of daunting.
Yeah. And before we let both of you go, we danced around a bit of Lions chat in relation to Johnny Sexton at the start of this piece. The schedule for the 2021 tour came out there recently. It's dropped from 10 to 8 games. We've been condensed from 6 to 5 weeks. The last two midweek games have been dropped. The likes of Stephen Jones have come out against this rather vocally, as we might expect. Mick Cleary as well in the Telegraph saying the pared down to beyond bare bones itinerary will be the ruination of the Lions as players realise that if they're not immediate first team material, then their selection goose is effectively cooked before departure. They'll be tackle bag holders and nothing else, says Mick Cleary. Is that something, Stuart, did you go along with?
I think the reality is the magic of the Lions is being peeled away. I was fortunate to be a Lion, not as illustrious as Keith, but we both toured and we both knew the wonder of going to some of the small towns for fans and players was something else. But I think there's a romance now that, if whatever I think is irrelevant, it's just going to lose out to the realism of the financial demands, unfortunately, of the Premiership clubs. And I think the Lions now... It's a magnificent concept. It's also a mass marketing opportunity where it uses the anachronism to feed off it. But what are the Lions really now? It's a three-match test series, and that's what it is. And I think, to be honest, I think Gatlin could have done with a game more, not two. The drawn series with New Zealand... It was only the last weekend, the last week of the series. They didn't have a midweek match. I think Gatlin will be happy not to have two midweek matches because he'll know his team pretty much before he goes. The Lions has changed now. The coach prepares for an entire year. It's not who's the best on their day. Like McGeek, and Gatlin knows who he wants. He will have them ready. And I think the Lions will have a decent shot. I would accept that it strips the tour of its magic, and if you want 30,000 people following them around wearing a red insurance company logo all over it, then it's not your ideal.
Would you go along with that sense of, like, there's a romanticism that you mentioned there? Is that falsely held at this stage of the game? Because it seems to be a Northern Hemisphere thing only, and it seems to be a romance for those that are directly involved. Like, you have the Premiership clubs who are digging their heels in, not wanting to move the final because they didn't want to give an extra game of preparation to Twickenham. It seems as if you've got one set of money people moving against another set of money people, and in the end, the business is always going to win out against the romance.
Yeah, I think so. I think the Lions as a concept is fighting against the inevitability of where the game is going. And I don't say that with... any great satisfaction, and I would be quite happy to be wrong, but I just can't see, unless French and English club rugby implodes financially, I cannot see the tide moving anything other than in their direction.
Keith, you clearly have fairly strong feelings about the Lions as well.
I do. Look, I love it with a passion. I know some fans kind of maybe don't quite get it and get more interested in their own country. I think you can hold both those thoughts together at once and not be the lesser for it. I'm disappointed with this, but I knew it was coming. And I've been disappointed with some of the elements where the Lions are getting marginalised. And you have to be very careful. The romance actually is a very big part of it. And it's also a big part of the values and the difficulty of it, and the blending of players together to get there. That's actually what the financial bodies are sponsoring. They want that. They don't want, let's come together and play a match and we're an invitational team. It's not that. It's the adversity. It's the difficulty. It's taking on the world champions. It's doing it over a period of time. It's integrating through everything. And so some of the pressure from the Southern Hemisphere is misplaced, because pretty much those unions are funded for the next 12 years by the amount of money that they make on the Lions. And that's a really big deal. And that's the first part. The second part is that we may end up, and this is absolutely heresy, but we may end up with being saved by a private equity company, you know, and in the case that they get a bad rep all the time, we're happy to build on that. But CVC, if they end up having a British and Irish league and a proper structure, if that were to be, it was mooted a few weeks ago, if that was to come about and happen, the natural pinnacle of that is a Lions tour. And in that instance, you can make it to be what it is supposed to be. It is the best shop window that combines countries, that brings the fans together. And in so many different parts of life and politics and everything else where it's becoming polarized, the opportunity of having a sporting event that brings people together is pretty phenomenal. And I think we lose that, and it is at our huge, huge peril if we do.
Yeah, Stuart, in the current climate, especially in the UK, and given what's coming up on Thursday, it kind of seems anachronistic to the current society you have over there at the moment.
Did you have to mention Thursday? It's a wearing process at the moment. I can't remember the United Kingdom being in such a tired, torn, bitter state. And frankly, the thoughts of seeing 30,000 people drunk as skunks wearing Lion shirts brings a smile to my face.
Yeah, it's a nice thought, and it's a pleasant one. And I guess we'll end it there. Stuart Barnes, thanks so much for talking to us this evening. Keith, well, thank you too.
Pleasure.
Cheers, gents.
Cheers.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.